DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotte Lomas. Coming up on the show, fed up with supermarkets, French farmers sell directly to consumers.
The big advantage with the vending machines is that people can stop off and buy our produce anytime. And that has doubled our sales.
Could eating insects help solve food insecurity?
There are a lot of people, particularly children, who are extremely undernourished. And they are malnourished because they don't have adequate food. And yet we have a lot of insects.
Plus, Italian wine growers plagued by drought encounter an even bigger problem. All that and more coming up. European dairy farmers have been experiencing their worst crisis in decades, in part caused by the EU's abolition of national milk quotas. Over the past 2 years, smaller farmers across Europe have had to slash their prices to compete with major players amid a massive overproduction of milk. Across Britain and France in particular, thousands of farmers have been forced out of business. While the public often believes the milk for their morning coffee comes from cows grazed outside, more and more often intensive indoor farming methods are used, where the animals never see the light of day. So some farmers think that by returning to traditional dairy production, they can save themselves from ruin. In the UK, Nick Martin has more.
A crowd watches as a herd of cows are released to pasture after a winter cooped up indoors. Having not seen grass for several months, many of the animals jump up and down for joy, much to the amusement of the onlookers. But these days, not all cows get to go outdoors, ever, as more and more large-scale farmers chase bigger profits by way of intensive indoor milk production. And while farmers' groups insist modern-day cows are better treated than at any time in history, Ian Woodhurst, UK farming campaign manager at the London-based World Animal Protection, thinks the move away from traditional farming methods is throwing up all kinds of welfare concerns.
It's quite clear from the research that's been done over the years into permanently housed cows, there's increased risks of lameness because of the fact they're on concrete flooring, increased rates of mastitis, so other infections. And for us, really, the key thing is the natural behaviour is that cows naturally should be grazing outside as grazing animals, and they form social groups. And within confined spaces, the social structure of those herds is much more difficult to play out, if you like, in a way. And so some cows will find they're bullied more often because of these dominant cows that will block passageways, for example, within sheds.
This anxiety and aggression in some cows can impact milk production, and World Animal Protection warns that the animals are being pushed to their physical limits to produce the most milk possible. Neil Darwent has been managing farms in rural Somerset in Western England for the past 30 years. He's been outspoken about the move towards so-called mega farms, where thousands of cows are milked in factory-like conditions. Instead, 3 years ago, he created the free-range Pasture Promise label, where consumers can be assured that the milk they are drinking comes from cows that have spent the maximum possible time outside grazing. In the UK, at least 180 days a year. He said the response from the public and from farmers to his free-range dairy concept has been phenomenal.
For too long, and I've known this myself, farmers have produced tanks full of white stuff and waved it goodbye as a truck collects it from the farm, and it disappears to who knows where. Now we have farmers who are working much more closely with their milk buyer and who are actively, say, engaged in promoting the product, but they also want to know where's the product ended up, how are sales this week, have we got any new customers? And as I said, it's engendering a sort of a renewed sense of ownership in the milk. It really matters to the farmers now where that milk goes and what's happening with it.
cows grazing on the beautiful rolling hills of Somerset contrasts with the massive industrial-scale milk production that many countries are moving towards, and where in the US, for example, indoor dairies can house up to 40,000 cows. The free-range milk idea comes amid a deep crisis in dairy farming, made worse by the EU scrapping national milk quotas 2 years ago. Falling demand in China and Russia due to economic sanctions placed on Moscow haven't helped. The number of dairy farms in Britain has dropped by two-thirds from around 30,000 a decade ago, leaving only those with the deepest pockets.
2015, 2016 have been some of the toughest years in living memory. We saw prices in 2015, 2016 drop from something in excess of 30 pence a litre. I know farms I was running myself, we were on 32p a litre, dropped to 18 pence a litre. And we've had a mass exodus of farmers to the point where at the beginning of this year, we dropped to something like 9,500 producers left in the UK. That's just incredible. I mean, again, those numbers have more than halved in the last 20 years.
Darwent believes the premium that free-range dairy farmers can command for their pasture-promised milk is just 2 or 3 pence per litre, or 3.5 euro cents, but will still allow more small-scale farmers to survive. And with some large supermarkets already on board, including Asda, which is owned by the US retail giant Walmart, free-range dairy is slowly becoming more popular, despite a lack of public awareness about how milk is produced.
We have had to overcome a perception that still exists in many places that all cows live in fields. That if you ask the British consumer to close their eyes and think about a British dairy farm, they would probably be imagining a field full of cows. Estimates vary, but it's said that something like 15%, 15 to 20% of cows in the UK don't go outside at all now. And there are increasing degrees to by which cows do or don't graze. So we're having to overcome a perception a little bit that all cows are free range. And now people are learning and asking more about their milk. That's becoming sort of more apparent. And the general response from the public is, of course, I want my milk to come from cows in fields. Where else would they be?
Campaigners warn that the environmental impact of more intensive dairies could also be huge. As well as the much larger risk of water and soil pollution, large-scale farms need huge amounts of animal feed. Woodhurst from World Animal Protection says it's important to dispel the myth that big is always better.
You have to consider things like feed costs and what the life cycle costs are of producing feed to give to cows if they're permanently housed, because they're not eating grass, so then you have to provide feed for them. And as we know, with all arable crops that you have to produce, whether that's for human consumption or for animal consumption, that requires space. There's deforestation, there's use of pesticides and herbicides to grow those crops, the use of fertilizers, which has its own kind of greenhouse gas issues. So grass, which naturally, you know, in the UK grows very well because of all the rain we have, is you know, in some ways probably a more sustainable option.
Woodhurst believes traditional methods are dying out much quicker than previously thought. He quoted figures from Britain's Department of the Environment, Farming and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA.
Research that was conducted by DEFRA said that only 30% of the farms in the study they did thought that they were traditional pasture-based dairy farms. So it's very unclear what the picture is and how many days cows are actually out and how many, you know, intensive indoor dairy farms there are. And we think it's critical, really, that the government starts collecting those statistics. So for the sake of consumers and for cows and for the dairy sector itself, to have some sort of picture about what is going on, and if the number of intensive indoor dairy farms is increasing, because that will just mean less choice for people that don't want to drink milk from those systems.
Neil Darwin says the farmers who have signed up to the free-range dairy are audited to prove they're keeping to the 180 days pasture promise. Although some farmers keep their cows outside for longer, Britain's climate doesn't allow for a full year of grazing.
We are not advocating a sort of an extreme, if you like, grazing system. We are trying to take that middle-of-the-road system that has always served our country very well. We all know that cows are very happy grazing in the sunshine, but we do get winter in the UK. It gets wet and muddy. The pasture stops growing. at certain times of year is definitely better for cows to be indoors rather than out. So we're not promoting an extreme sort of polarised system. We are taking the best of what British dairy farming can deliver, really.
With wafer-thin margins and increased competition from overseas, many farmers insist the move to mega dairies is not only inevitable, but their only chance of survival. Whether ideas like free-range dairy can truly take off and allow smaller farmers to stay afloat will largely be decided by the public. Campaigners hope that if consumers were to realise that labels on milk cartons showing cows grazing in bright green fields were often not just a marketing gimmick, but in many cases an outright lie, they'd be quick to change their mind. Nick Martin, DW, London.
Well, dairy farmers are hardly alone. It's a familiar complaint among many farmers that supermarkets which sell their produce pay them far too little. But now a simple innovation that began in Germany is allowing farmers to increase their sales of local farm produce by selling directly to consumers. In Europe's biggest farming country, France, vending machines are popping up across the countryside and helping farmers stay in business. John Laurenson starts this report in the village of Canaples in the Somme département, northern France.
There are 100 goats at the Canaples goat farm. One goat produces 2 to 3 litres of milk a day. It takes 1 litre of milk to make a cheese. So how many cheeses do they make a day on the Canaples goat farm? Come on, that's right, 200 to 300. Farmer Joël Lhermitte sells some at his farm shop and some at local street markets. And now he's got this thing by the road in front of his farm.
We've got two simple vending machines here. Both are customized drink and sandwich dispensers. There's one with our goat's cheeses in it, fresh with chives, honey or wood ash, and one aged cheese which has a stronger taste. There's a neighbor's cow's milk cheese and butter and yogurt as well. Then there's a second machine which sells the eggs, tomatoes, honey and strawberries from another neighboring farm.
Lhermitte says that when he installed these machines 1 year ago, he had no idea how they'd affect sales. But the impact, he says, has been huge.
If people want to buy our cheeses at the farm shop, it's open on Wednesday, Friday and Saturday afternoons. We can't open for longer because we need to be looking after the goats or making the cheese. The big advantage with the vending machines is that people can stop off and buy our produce any time, and that has doubled our sales.
I hang around in the sun waiting for a customer, admiring the hollyhocks growing next to the wooden milking shed that houses the vending machines. I don't have to wait long.
I was born in the country. My father was a farmer, so we always ate fresh farm produce. So I like this a lot. The last time I was here, I bought apples from the machine, and they were really good. There's no village shop here, but now, if you need some eggs to make crepes, you can just pop out to the machine and get them.
Drive around these parts and you'll soon see how automated farm shops are transforming rural life in France. There are, for example, over 40 machines selling potatoes in the Somme area alone, many at lower than supermarket prices. And the range of farm food is getting wider all the time. Meat is a big growth area. Oysters, farm-made ice cream. Didier Filbing is the founder of a company that has now sold 300 purpose-built vending machines to farmers around France, many of them the size of shops with 200 compartments. His company is based near France's border with Germany, which is where he first saw automated farm shops. The machines themselves are made in Germany. He adapts them for the French market. You can use credit cards in his machines, for example. Already, he says, France has almost as many machines as the Germans. And this, he says, is only the beginning.
There are still 200,000 farms in France. And for vegetables only, we still have 35,000 farmers. And each of them wakes up every morning and wonders, how will I sell?
Philbing says automatic distribution is giving a new lease of life to some of his struggling farmer customers.
You know, I seldom get real figures. They say what they want. But one of them told me if I hadn't bought the machine, I would have closed last year. So the machine saved his farm. And we can speak on another level of an automatic vending machine of farm products, which is installed in a small village where nothing is left for the moment. Then again, you have a point where people can gather. We already saw that. And we have some customers who sell so much in the vending machines that they have to hire some extra workers in the fields. And on another level, again, I even remember someone who told me that before the vending machine was there, she was eating less vegetables. And vegetables are good for health.
Back at the goat farm, I bump into the neighbouring egg man who's come to fill up the machine with fresh eggs. He's got four machines now, he says. These eggs are sold at the same price as they would be in the supermarket, he says, but by selling direct, he's increased his income a lot. As for the goat cheese man, Joël Lhermitte,
I used to be happy to work with the supermarket chains, but now when they contact me, I don't call them back because I've got nothing left to sell.
John Norrison, DW, Canaples, France.
You're listening to Living Planet with me, Charlotte Lomas, coming to you from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. Still to come on the show, as the world's population continues to grow, could eating insects offer a sustainable answer to ensuring our future food security?
This is a protein for future because we are getting into a stage where we cannot farm sheep, cattle, goats and all that. We need these small animals that can give us very rich nutrients.
In Italy, record temperatures and drought this summer have been disastrous to farmers, resulting in billions of euros worth of crop damages. But one group that hasn't complained, at least not about the heat, is wine producers. Italy is the world's second biggest exporter of wine, and the lack of rainfall and blazing sun are expected to make 2017 an exceptional year in terms of the quality of wine. But the quantity of grape production will be down, and that's not just because of the drought. As Megan Williams reports from Tuscany, wine growers, big and small, are facing another ravenous challenge.
A church bell tolls at noon on a hot summer's day in the Tuscan countryside. Silvery rows of olive trees cover the hills, and leafy vineyards too, like the one farmer and local winemaker Gennaro Nesti is tending. With the blistering heat of Italy this summer, the grapes have matured early, and Nesti is already on the lookout for signs near the woods behind his vineyard for the biggest worry as the harvest approaches, wild boars.
Scendono da qua. This is the path that the wild boars descend from the forest into the vineyard. Anche qua.
Nesti leads me to one, two, three different paths the boars have trampled through the forest to reach the succulent grapes.
Sì, ora quest'anno.
Standing next to his small vineyard, he shows me what the wild boar ate. He says in past years, the grapes would grow so low on the vine, they'd almost touch the ground.
This year, the grapes start to grow up here. Last year, they grew much lower, but the boars ate them all.
But because of an invasion of wild boars, which have devoured the grapes and tender vines, he's pruned them about 5 feet high on the vine, a move that has drastically reduced his harvest. Italy's Farmers Association Coldiretti says in the past decade, the number of boars has doubled to about 1 million. One theory is that a species of boars from ex-Yugoslavia that has more babies per litter is causing the explosion. Tuscany's wine growers group says this year the boars will cost them about 20 million euros in damages. Many wine producers have resorted to putting up fences or electrical wires, but smaller producers can't afford that. Nesti's neighbor, Gemma Zavolta, says the wild boars are a problem for her too.
Last year, we harvested nothing, zero. In the years before, only 20% of the usual. The boars stripped the vines clean of grapes.
But that's not her only concern.
Last summer, a mother wild boar, training a dozen or so young ones, came right up here, just a few meters from where we're eating.
She now eats indoors. The boars have killed people and caused car crashes, even in cities like Rome, where they're sighted more and more. Last year, Italy passed a law to reduce the boar and deer population by extending the hunting season, though limiting the age and gender of animals targeted. It was met with fierce opposition from environmentalists, who argue that the boars should be sterilized rather than shot, and their population controlled by increasing the number of natural predators, like wolves. Surprisingly, hunters such as Federico Piccioli, who runs a small veterinarian clinic in the valley below, agree with the environmentalists that the law does little to solve the problem.
The animals are being urbanized in a world that's being taken over by people. If you're going to put up fences everywhere, the animals are going to look for new places to live.
He says the only way to keep the boars away from vineyards is to stop illegal building around forests and to allow the culling of old trees, something he says Italy is not doing.
It's not normal that a wild boar invades the places where people live. If they do, they're doing so for a reason.
When you don't cull older trees in the forest, nothing grows on the ground for the boars to eat. They're only trying to survive, he says. Piccioli adds that with the ongoing drought, that quest for survival and incursions into Tuscany's vineyards will only intensify. Megan Williams, DW Radio, Tuscany, Italy.
By 2050, the global population is expected to reach 10 billion. But how do we feed all these mouths without destroying the planet? Well, some say a healthy and sustainable option is to eat insects. While it may disgust some of you, in many parts of the world, people regularly eat bugs. In Kenya, flying ants are considered a delicacy and sometimes eaten alive. Other bugs are processed into food. And one professor in Western Kenya is researching how to blend these insects into delicious dishes like biscuits and sausages. And farmers are beginning to breed them for profit. Linda Stoud went to the Kisumu region to find out more, and Sarah Steffen presents this report.
Eunice Omolo grabs a large grey plastic box from a pile of boxes. Gently, she takes off the lid. Inside, the box is lined with egg cartons that neatly divide the box into small chambers. In each of these separate chambers are crickets, lots of them. One box could contain up to 1,500 crickets, even as many as 2,000. In her kitchen, Omolo easily has 60 of these boxes, all neatly stacked on top of each other. Why does she have that many bugs in her house? Omolo breeds crickets and then sells them.
I started it as a hobby, and now it is becoming a business. For consumption, somebody, I think, are doing consumption.
Insects, crickets, grasshoppers, termites are everywhere in Western Kenya. And these critters often end up on dinner plates. But until recently, catching insects was seen as child's play rather than serious business.
They would say that these things, we only picked them when we were little, because you would run around the farm, run around the gardens and pick one cricket or two crickets. You roast them on a naked fire out there in the garden and eat.
That's Monica Ayeko, a university professor in Bondo near Lake Victoria.
I started working on insects when I realized that there are a lot of people, particularly children, who are extremely undernourished. And they are malnourished because they don't have adequate food. And yet we have a lot of insects in the lake region.
Catching crickets in the wild is a tedious process. It takes a long time and isn't very efficient. With her research, Ayeko has come up with the best methods for raising crickets and has taught her techniques to breeders. Grace Achieng is one of them.
It's not hard work. We feed them with cabbage, flour, and a mixture of other fodder. In nature, insects live on greens, so we give them that here as well.
Eating insects was still considered normal for her grandparents, but today's young people remain skeptical. Judith Dauma was one of the brave ones who actually ate a cricket to see what it tastes like.
I once tried a fried insect and it was good. My mother prepared them and I took only one. I removed the head and took a tiny bite and then quickly ate the whole thing because it was delicious.
Monica Ayeko says it's much easier to grind grilled crickets into a fine powder and use that as flour for cooking.
The idea now, how to bring in a processed food such that it doesn't look like a bug cricket that's going to bite somebody. That's when I started working on biscuits, because I know biscuits are a favorite of children.
Cakes, biscuits, and porridge made with insects are now available in local supermarkets, made by a company that buys the bugs from the breeders. But the extra income isn't the most important part, says Silpa Ayango.
With regular food, my son was incredibly thin. But then I gave him crickets and I saw a huge difference. His body changed and he looked healthy.
The insects are packed with essential amino acids, vitamins and minerals such as iron and zinc. And, says Monica Ayeko, they're free from chemicals. And most importantly, they're cheap.
This is a protein for future, because we are getting into a stage where we cannot farm sheep, cattle, goats and all that. We need these small animals that can give us very rich nutrients.
Sarah Steffen with that report by Linda Stoud.
Hi there. Should I ask you?
And that wraps up the show for today. Our program was produced with the help of Eliana Giaducci and Christoph Gruver. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes and SoundCloud. Or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Catch you next week.
Let's don't be wasting our time. Let's don't lead each other blind. If you don't want me, my heart can't stand it another time. There's only 24 hours in a day. Don't leave much time to play. I don't dig that no way, honey. car can't take it no another day. Listen to me, honey. I've been told by many different girls, Otis, I love you. Oh boy, they tell me this from the bottom of their soul, but they didn't mean it. Listen, I've been let down.